Welcome to Galley Tables, sharing stories and sharing life. Each month, Galley Tables Storytelling hosts a live event in the Kodiak community. Storytellers are given 7 minutes to tell a personal story related to a monthly theme. Tonight, we're going to hear those stories.
We want to say a few big thank yous. First of all, thank all of you guys for coming out. We want to say a really big thank you to Jitsua for playing us that really fantastic movie. We just love you guys. And they'll be back at intermission. And we want to say thank you to all of our sponsors, to KMXT and KODK Public Radio. And to the Kodiak Arts Council and the Best Western Kodiak Inn for letting us use this very nice space. Tonight's theme is What's Cooking?
Hey everybody, I'm Laura, and I just want to tell you, please enjoy the show tonight and join me in welcoming our first storyteller to the stage. I get to read her bio because I know her personally and I happen to really like her. If I didn't know, I would make somebody else read it. So, Antoinette Gross. Come on. Antoinette Gross was born in Gastonia, North Carolina, ages ago.
Ages.
She is a true Southern girl. Just wait for the accent.
Don't ruin the surprise.
She came to Kodiak for the first time in 2000 when her husband was stationed at the Loran Station.
Loran Station.
Back before the road was paved.
That was before your time.
That was before my time. They are currently on their third tour, and she considers Kodiak to be her home. She currently has her dream job, a kindergarten teacher at Peterson Elementary. I love Peterson too. In her spare time, she likes to sew, but her husband says that she just collects fabric. Thankfully, he hasn't found all that she had actually hidden in the house. She also loves to sing. It says in parentheses off-key, but that's totally a lie. And laugh. She has a secret desire to compete on the Amazing Race, but has yet to find a racing partner, so you're inspired.
At the end, so just bear with me here. I want to share three fears I have in life. I have many fears, but I'm just going to narrow it down to three because I only have 7+ minutes. Okay, so my first fear is grates, those metal grates. I will not walk on a grate. I am very skinny and I will fall to my death. So, not going to happen. I will walk around every single time, okay? My second fear, actually, I might share this fear with some people in the audience. Are there any other teachers here tonight? Then we all have this fear. This fear is teaching the day after Halloween. That, my friend, is the scariest day of the year. Now, trust me, I know. I survived it, though. I'm here, thankfully. Now, my last fear I want to talk about tonight, this is probably my biggest fear in life. I actually share this fear with my daughter. Hi, Maddie. I love you no matter what I say. We share this fear. Now, she's a teenager, so we don't share many things because obviously I was never a teenager and I can't relate to anything that she's going through. But, I love you. We do share this fear, like legit fear. Okay, so I'm in the kitchen cooking. There's the tie-in, okay. I'm in the kitchen cooking. And I hear this like blood shrill scream from downstairs. Our house is flipped, so when I say downstairs, that's where the kids live. So I run down the stairs. I was like, Maddie, what's wrong? And she's just, Mom, bathtub. I was like, what? You fell in the bathtub? Are you okay? She says, no, there's a mouse in the bathtub. I was like, is it alive or dead? She said, I don't know. I didn't interrogate it. So, well, I'm not going to look, right? So what do? I'm a mom. I call Peyton. That's my teenage son. I said, you need to come take care of this. He says, what? I said, there's a mouse in the bathtub.
bathtub. He goes, is it alive or dead? It's like, I don't know. I didn't interrogate it. So he says, fine. He says, but you're helping. I was like, that's fine. I'll help. But see, I have this belief that if your eyes are closed when you do something, it really didn't happen. Right? So if I keep my eyes closed the entire time we're capturing this mouse, not sure if it's dead or alive, we capture this mouse, then I never saw it. It was never in my house. So I go get the plastic bag. He comes back with a fire poker. He's like, what are you doing, Peyton? We're not making skewers. I said, you gotta go get a different choice of something to clean this up with. So he comes back with the dustpan and the little sweeper from the fireplace. I close my eyes, hold the bag open. We take care of business, right? Never saw it, didn't happen. Well, I am a boat wife. There are other boat wives out here. So the only way I can communicate with my husband 90% of the year is through email. So I email my husband. I said, Matt, come home. We have a problem. I am scared, right? Check my email the next day. He's replied back. He says, babe. That's always his endearment. Babe. Okay, now this next line of his email. You have to understand, I spoke last year, and some of you may remember, my husband has a life philosophy. Not based off of a philosopher. No, that would be too simple. No, it's based off of a movie. Okay, a very popular movie that he says everybody should watch at least once in their life. Every major decision, he goes back to this movie as a reference to figure out what he's going to do. If there was no other movie in the world but this movie, your life would be complete. Email reads, babe, that's his endearment, be a Jedi. Buy traps. Where there's one, there's many. It's like, thank you very much. Greatly appreciate that. But I want to be a Jedi. My whole life I've strived to be a Jedi. That's all I want to be is a Jedi, a winner, right? So, not a stormtrooper. So, I go to the store and I buy the traps, right? Well, I try to buy the traps. The guy that's helping me at the hardware store in Kodiak, I won't mention which one, but it's right down here. He says, we're actually out of those kinds of traps. All I can sell you is glue traps. I was like, I don't care. Just give me something. So, while I'm checking out with glue traps, he proceeds to tell me that, oh yeah, ma'am, I've captured like 40 rats in my crawl space. I don't want to hear that. It's like when you're pregnant, you know, you're like 9 months pregnant and everybody wants to share their horror birthing story. It's the last thing you want to hear. Like, I'm about to give birth. I don't want to hear some horror emergency room story. No, stop. Buy the traps, go home. Well, a family that sets traps together stays together. So guess who helped me set traps? My kids. So we put them all in those dark spaces that you don't ever go, right? Wait a while. But you know, you don't think about it, but like, it's a lot of anxiety. All day I knew I had to check these traps. I mean, I tried to get a couple husbands to come help me of other people because, oh, my husband's never home. But anyway, we go check the traps. They're all empty. But we go to check the last one. We open the door under the closet stairs, right? We open it, and we look in, and the trap's not there. Look at the floor, and I was like, oh my goodness, it fell. Like, those mice are really scurrying, right? They've knocked it off the shelf. I go to pick it up. This all happens simultaneously. Picture this in your mind. I'm picking it up. My daughter's screaming at the top of her lungs. I then scream because I look down, and you know what I saw on the mouse trap, right? My son's screaming at us to stop being ridiculous by screaming. The dog runs through. The trap falls out of the hand. The trap falls on the dog. The mouse is hanging on the trap. And it's complete and utter chaos. Okay, I get that cleaned up. A couple days later, right, I email the husband again. I was like, capital letter, exclamation point, come home now. I'm terrified. I'm not safe in my house. I'm ready to move into a hotel. I'm done with this. Get your butt home, right? He writes back. He says, remember, be a Jedi. Also, if you name them, it helps. They become more friendly. If you name them, when you call them, they will come. I'm thinking, you know, he better be glad he wasn't there in person because I can't really yell at him if he's not there. But I'm thinking, I am not Cinderella. I am not sewing clothes saying, Gus, come here, I have a shirt for you. No, so... Right? Bring my son from home, hockey. He comes in, he usually runs in, takes a shower. I stay outside with the dog for a couple minutes. I come inside, I hear this screaming out of the bathroom. Mom! Mom! It's like, come upstairs. I was like, what is going on? Don't open the door. It's like, Peyton, I'm not going to open the door. You know, he's in the bathroom. Never open a door when a boy's in the bathroom, especially a teenager. It's like, what is going on in there? He said, I need a weapon. It's like, a weapon? What kind of weapon do you need? He's like, I need a weapon. I've got it cornered. Well, I'm thinking glue stick? Like, I'm a kindergarten teacher. I don't know what kind of weapon you want from me. I just reach for the tomato plant, the skewer. I was like, okay, I've got a weapon. He says, slide it through the door, but don't open it wide. He'll escape. So I squeeze the skewer in there. I swear it sounds like a frat party going wrong. I don't know what was happening in that bathroom. I mean, stuff was coming off the walls, right? Finally gets quiet. I said, Peyton, what did you do in there? He's like, well, I had the plunger in one hand, the weapon in the other, but he got away. I was like, okay, that's okay. Is my bathroom still in one piece? He goes, well, about that, Mom, I have to tell you something. I was like, what happened? Don't open the door. I was like, Peyton, I'm not going to open the door, but what happened? He says, well, when the mouse ran across the floor, I was midstream. I said, and? He says, well, since you're not a male, you don't really understand how these things work. It's really difficult to stop peeing when you're midstream. He says, and the mouse didn't just run by my feet one time. It kind of went back and forth. Now, at this point, I'm picturing Zorro, you know, making Z's. But instead of a sword, Peyton's using a different kind of weapon. Yeah, my bathroom was doused in urine. Okay, not good, right? My husband finally comes home, takes care of the problem. Everything's good, everything's golden. He bought real man traps, he said. He didn't know what I was trying to do. It's completely safe. I feel normal in my home. I don't have to check my shoes every time I put my feet in them. I mean, I'm feeling really safe. Everything's good. I'm in the kitchen cooking, because that's what I do all the time is cook, because I have teenage kids. And Peyton comes in, he goes, oh no, Mom. I was like, oh, what happened? He said, I smell it. He said, there's one dead. It's somewhere in this house. I smell it, Mom. I said, son, trust me, your dad said it's clear. If your dad said it's golden, it's golden. We're good. He says, Mom, I smell it. I said, then go look for it. I'm trying to cook dinner. So he goes, searches all the dark corners and crannies. He comes back and says, I can't find it. He says, but I smell it. And he walks over to me. He goes, oh, the smell is strong in here. He walks a little closer to the stove. He goes, oh, my God, what is that? That smells like a dead mouse. I was steaming fresh broccoli.
He grew up in California, where they have things called smog and traffic. He volunteered and worked at the Kodiak Baptist Mission in the kitchen, and during those years he developed a love of cooking and serving. He met his wife Stephanie, who was born and raised in Kodiak, and now you can find Andrew working at Cost Savers, and if you're lucky enough, you can enjoy his cooking at the Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center. But he says he would much rather serve you as a guest and not as a patient. Please welcome Andrew.
Okay. Let me help you with that.
Of course.
There we go.
No crack it, okay. So the craziest thing about cooking is, you know, being a chef, it's, you know, what's cooking, right? It's the dread as a parent, you know, if it's a child asking a parent, and the parent goes, I don't know, you know, let's go to McDonald's or something, then, you know, it starts. When you're a baby, it's easy. It says, go to mama. As you grow up a little older, it's, you know, eat all your peas and carrots and all that stuff. And when you're in high school or college, well, that would, you know, things change. You have money now, and you have time and less money, but, you know, you have to feed yourself. Then when you get married, that really changes. Instead of having one person you have to provide and cook for, you have two. So long goes the days of wherever you want to eat, right? So for me, when I was young, my dad and my brother worked at the YMCA. And during that time, in my junior high, the high school age, I helped my mom in the kitchen. And I just, you know, helping my parent, you know, feeding our family. And that's where the seeds of cooking really started for me. You know, first of all, it just started with, you know, chopping vegetables and helping out my fingers. And, you know, catching things on fire and making things taste good. Yeah, the first summer I came here in 03, I did not know anything about cooking besides what I picked up at home. And I was very blessed and lucky to have Lucien Bernard, who's a chef, and just take me under his wing. And, you know, instead of what's for dinner or what's for lunch, people started asking me that question. I was like, whoa, I'm not ready for this. And luckily, I had Lucien. I said, oh, Lucien, what are we having tonight? Oh, okay. So, and, you know, as my summers progressed here, you know, I started working at restaurants and, you know, just laying down my cooking skills. And eventually I went to culinary school and, you know, people kept on still asking me, what's for dinner? What's for lunch? I'm like, oh, at least I can make it for you now. And, I came up here in 2010 and started running, you know, around the kitchen at the Baptist Mission and, you know, started growing and cooking. I also realized that sometimes in your stage of life, that's also a hard question. During the off-season at Baptist Mission, I helped out in the food bank. And twice a week, we welcome people into the food bank who may not have, you know, what we, you know, traditional and not, you know, food at home. And just learning, you know, just seeing people come through there, like, really opened up my eyes. You know, being a chef, you know, obviously I want to provide for people, but, you know, sometimes people don't have the means to provide for themselves. Now that I'm married, as I said long ago, for days of nachos or wherever I felt like cooking, right? And I'm very blessed to have a beautiful wife who follows recipes and who taught me how to follow recipes and bake. Especially now working at the hospital, I really, really have to follow recipes. And long goes the days of whatever I want to make. So, as I said, you know, I would love to serve you guys. You know, if you just happen to walk through the doors of the hospital, I would rather feed you guys walking and not laying down in the bed. So, you know, but yeah, I really wish I had a very specific story to tell, but, you know, just cooking and serving people, that's what I'm about. And that's what I love to do, and that's why I'm here in Korea.
She's a stay-at-home mom currently homeschooling her four children. Her hobbies include the art of taking up different hobbies. And she's a little bit good at a lot of different things. She's a traveler at heart, having visited all 50 U.S. states, along with France, Italy, and the United Kingdom. Welcome, Misty. Kentucky, just like every place else, has certain stereotypes about it. And one of the stereotypes that I've gotten a lot from people is that hillbilly stereotype. And so people just picture in their head, like, someone in the backwoods wearing overalls and no shoes and making moonshine. And I know these types of people, and some of them are my cousins. Like, it was never my family. And so, especially when I was a teenager, I was really, really particular about letting people know, like, oh, we're not like that. Like, we're from northern Kentucky. Like, we're basically Cincinnati. And so, this particular story happened when I was a teenager, and I cared a lot about what people thought. And so I was in high school, and two new students had started coming to our school, and this was a really big deal because we went to a small, tiny private school of like 30 people. And so they had just moved to Kentucky, and I got to know them, and after like a couple months, I invited them over to my house for dinner. And so the day arrives, and I go pick them up. And they live a little bit more in the city in these really nice townhouses. And so I started to get a little bit nervous, like, what are they going to think about my car and my house? Because my car was kind of really, really ugly, and someone had, like, gifted it to me instead of junking it. And so it had, like, a tire behind the passenger seat to hold it up and, like, a wrench to roll down the window and a whole lot of duct tape. And so I'm like, my house is really old, and their house is, like, nice and white and new furniture, and mine's, like, old, like not antique old, but, like, ripping old. And so they get to my car, they don't say anything about it, and we start to head to my house. And we get off the expressway and off the main roads and under the winding road that leads to my house, and one of my friends is like, Misty, what part of Kentucky are you from? Like, we're not entering the boonies, are we? Like, your family's not secret hillbillies. And I'm like, no, you guys know my mom. Like, she works at the school, and we're completely normal. Like, there's Cincinnati, you can see it. So it turns into somehow this running joke about, like, what's going to be for dinner that night? Like, are we going to have your great grandma's possum recipe? Or, oh, look, there's some roadkill. Should we bring it home for your dad? And so I didn't tell him that we actually do have my grandma's, like, church cookbook recipe that has a possum recipe in it. I just kind of left out those details, and that I have had frog legs and squirrels. Like, I just left it all. I'm like, no, we're normal. And so we drive into my house. And I didn't think to prepare them for the fact that my neighbor had just shot a deer, and hanging near our mailbox was this deer. And their faces quickly revealed to me that wasn't their normal Kentucky. And they see this dead deer hanging up, and they're like, you totally lie. Like, your family is hillbilly, just admit it. There's a dead deer in a tree by your mailbox. And I'm like, no, that's just Crazy Eddie. He's our neighbor. Like, I mean, yeah, we shoot deer, but, like, we hang them in the backyard, not in front. So they're just like, no, you're right. And the fact that you just called your neighbor Crazy Eddie just confirms that you're the neighbor. I'm like, no. So we turn and we pull up my driveway, and as we start to pull up, my friends just start busting out laughing. And I have no clue what they're laughing at. I'm trying to, like, scan my yard and look at all the weird things. Like, what is it? Like, we had an old bus, like, that had been there since before I was born, that had a trampoline in front of it that we would, like, jump from, and a bunch of old cars. And there was, like, a huge fire pit that had, like, old furniture and brush. I'm like, well, that's normal-ish. So I'm like, that's not what they're laughing about. And so, like, I pull into my parking spot, and as I, like, pull in, I can see what they're laughing at, and I, like, get out of my car, and up on the, like, flat part of my roof sits my two younger brothers, and they're about 15 and 10, and they're in these, like, folding lawn chairs that they probably got out of the fire pit, and they're both wearing, like, fishing hats with, like, flies in it, and, like, my family doesn't even fish, so I don't where they got them, but they're sitting there, and they've got, like, off-brand pop cans in their hand, and their rifles are, like, sitting across their back. And it just looks really, really bad. And it's not normal. And so we get out of the car, and I'm like, what are you guys doing? And my brother, and I still don't know why, in this, like, twang accent, was like, the cans keep getting in the trash. I'm going to shoot them, and I'm going to skin them and make a hat. But at that point, there was just no turning back. Like, it had been burned into their mind, and for the rest of the time I knew them, they just referred to us as, like, the backwoods hillbillies. But the night went fine. Like, the rest of the night, my parents got in on some little hillbilly jokes and stuff like that, but it was fine, and my brothers didn't shoot a raccoon, and Eddie didn't bring over venison, and the thing of actually cooking for dinner that night was spaghetti, because, like I told my friends, we were a completely normal family.
Coast Guard and came to Alaska in 1989, but later returned to Kodiak for her husband's U.S. Coast Guard job. She's currently working as a domestic goddess and has twin 10-year-old girls and a 14-year-old son. She enjoys reading, playing, learning, and cooking, and she first came to Alaska to work on the Exxon Valdez.
When I came to Kodiak 28 years ago in 1989, it was Christian Love Robinson Cooler. And I was a cook in the U.S. Coast Guard. My first induction to Alaska was I was graduated a month and a half early to serve during the Exxon Valdez tragedy. I had not intended to be a cook in the Coast Guard. I really was stepping out of my family's expectation listed by training to be a chef. I thought that I wanted to try something new. I trained to be a chef, and I wanted to be something totally wacky, like a quartermaster, something like that. But weak will and patriotic duty and peer pressure changed my mind. So I ended up using many key elements of my chef training to become a pretty great cook, which is what really we all are, hospitality workers. We're chefs, we're cooks, And there, it's all the same thing. So you can anonymize it. So the person who cooks for you at Danny's, they're a chef. I remember my mom, who I do love, being very scathing about wanting to do a menial job. It was that I had really stepped out of my family's expectations and wishes by training to be a chef. My mother wanted me to be a stewardess. And meet a nice man and get married and have children. I ended up doing that very thing 25 years going strong. But I'm a classically trained French chef, and I wanted to do something totally different. So my great-grandmother, who was a twin, like my beautiful daughters, our beautiful daughters, who lived to be 102, said something to me when I was kind of caught on the post of not knowing what your mother wants you to do, because girls want to do now. She said, "Well," she's in Nebraska, "you always have a job, and everyone has to eat." And so during my apprenticeship as a bon manger, making cold apps, soups, light setups, Christiana, Captain Canard, something we need. So I trained with people that were from Switzerland, but they all spoke French, and so I had to really quickly learn a whole bunch of French. So what that means is plat is the edible decoration and cold salads and other items that finish a really perfect classical plate. Hot desserts and souffles, and if you can produce 200 plus souffles a night, including the one that Julia Child, who was from my hometown, liked enough to come to the kitchen and tell you, "It was superb." can definitely go to Valdez, Alaska and make 500 plus box lunches a day. And not only that, but they had made a mistake with the reservist, so it was me and a chief who didn't want to do. So, that's a lot of work. But cooking in a weird, unfamiliar place would soon come to be a very regular and rewarding thing. The pure, sweet satisfaction of making the simplest well is fulfilling. Having beignet and chicory coffee break, community coffee provided by the Louisiana Reservist, and a taste of home in cold Alaska. When I was relieved from my temporary duty above these, I went to my initial duty, the Storrs. There were many fine meals prepared. From Kodiak, the Bering Chain, to Russian waters, Hawaii, and beyond. See what happened? I don't know if I call him out. I start crying myself. There is something so honorable, feeling, dare I say, sacred, to send a really good hot soup back in a cooler, take an RHI, eat out a paper cup with a plastic spoon. That truly changes the mood and temperament of an boarding party of 1, 2, 3, 7, 4 days. When I reported the Storrs, I was seaman apprentice, assistant special cooler. That's right, I was sass cooler. Apparently, I might have been the only one. I had a really fabulous chief, Sonny Cruz, and while his commentary was not PC, oh, I love her melons. What did I say? I was supported and never had to take a day of leave under that man's watch. My only disagreement with Chief Cruz involved a AFRC, Armed Forces Recipe Card. Cards of about 8x6, recipes for 100 people, letting you tailor the amount for your crew. And I tried. I really tried to stick to them, but they were so bland sometimes. And our big fork in the road, pun intended, was over chicken fried steak. My father's from the South, and my mother was partially raised by her Southern great-grandmother. According to the AFRC, they should be breaded, fried, and then coated and baked with brown gravy. No way, son A. So we bickered, fussed, and then we had this big cook-off. Split the meat 50-50 and let the crew judge. I'll be kind and say that I cooked crispy chicken fried steak topped later with milk and sausage gravy for the next 2 years. He was a good sport about it. My culinary judgment was allowed free rein, which worked for everybody. One of my other many key memories was catching a 300-plus-pound halibut on fish haul and turning into mid-wrap meals over the next month. Mid-wraps for the unboaties, or midnight ration, is a meal that feeds the guys sleeping through evening chow. Mid-wraps has no funding on the book, so you try to repurpose foods, and mid-wraps was a fun challenge. You make a mid-wrap that feeds 92 people of 86 people on board. Well, that is what's cooking.
Muscles. listening to the galley table stories. And so I signed up, and then I go home, and of course I have second thoughts, and I think, who's going to want to listen to this story of an older woman? Older, not old, because there's a big difference. And then I thought, well, I am older, but I'm not dead. So here goes. Hey, good looking, what you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me? So that's a song, and it's also a cliche. And this is going to be about cooking and about cliches. So, you know, when you get to be my age, you've been cooking for a long time. And I like to think I'm getting better at it. When I was young, I could throw together a grilled cheese sandwich or a bowl of mac and cheese. I wasn't that particular. I was just hungry. But as I got older, I realized the importance of having spices. And I realized that you could bring out the true flavor of a dish if you cooked it slow and at a low temperature. And then you ratcheted up the heat right before the climax. And you always... start with the best ingredients. So, you know, I'm still hungry, but I'm a little bit more particular. So this is a story about me in Ecuador on a beach. I'm at an open-air bar. I'm having my evening cocktail. And this guy walks by and he says, have we met before? And I kind of roll my eyes in my head and I think, cliche guy. But we start talking, and he's pretty interesting, and he's a chef from Kansas who is in Ecuador helping his friend to rebuild a bar that had been demolished by the recent earthquake that had swept the coast of Ecuador. But this guy wasn't just a regular chef. He was a chef artist. He was the type that would create a sculpture out of fruits and vegetables. So, like, you might go to an event, and on the main table, there would be, like, a waterfall or a water fountain, and it would be totally made out of fruits and vegetables. And when he cooked in a restaurant, his plate was his, your plate was his palette, and he created this magnificent display. And he had pictures on his iPhone, and we looked at the pictures, and he had won awards, and I was pretty impressed, and so we made plans to have dinner the following evening. So we went to dinner at a restaurant, and then he suggested a walk on the beach, and it's a beautiful evening, so we start walking down the beach, and all of a sudden, he takes my hand. And I'm like, ooh, what's going on here? And then a few steps later, he pulls me to him, and he kisses me. And I say, I have to go home right now. And I start huffing it down the beach. And he walks with me, and we get to the gate of my hostel. And I said, well, thanks very much. I had a wonderful time. I'll see you tomorrow. Because we had made plans to take a bus to the mall where there was an ice cream store. And I'm a sucker for ice cream, and I didn't want to miss that. So I ran through the gate and up to my room. So the next day, I'm a little late getting to the bus stop, and as I walk up, the bus is going by, and there's the cliche guy, and he sees me, and he yells at the bus driver to stop the bus, and he stops the bus, and I get on. You know, in other words, he's a nice guy. And it wasn't awkward or anything. We had a lot to talk about. He went on and on about the trials and tribulations of trying to rebuild a bar in Ecuador. Like, he had ordered sand like 3 weeks ago, and finally the truck came that morning. But then they couldn't dump the sand because the dumper didn't work. And anyway, on and on, we're talking. And we get to the mall, and we walk around the mall, and then we order our ice cream. I got two scoops in a cup, and he got a banana split. And we sit down at the table, and I think, you know, I'm just going to be perfectly honest. At this stage in my life, I know what I want and I know what I don't want. So I say to him, you know about the other night, I have to know a guy for quite a while before I hold their hand, let alone kiss them. And he, cliche guy, says, well, you can't blame a guy for trying. And I go, no, I can't blame you, but I didn't really feel anything. There wasn't any spark. And cliche guy says, well, then I guess I'm just going to have to figure out how to light your fire. Okay, so that's the ultimate cliche, but I had to admit it was pretty darn cute. So we became fast friends after that. We had a lot of walks on the beach. We went boogie boarding. And he even cooked me, but it wasn't anything romantic. He never tried to hold my hand again. He never tried to kiss me. But he did fix me several excellent meals. We just never got to the dessert, if you know what I mean.
Thanks, Michelle. I heard that story in rehearsal, but she left out the kissing part. Okay, so our next storyteller is Alicia. Alicia is just a small town Alaskan girl following Jesus wherever he may lead. Thankfully, she was brought to Kodiak at the tender age of 2, but always had dreams of going back to her birth state of California. So she did, attending college, and just before leaving, she caught herself a California boy. And thankfully, again, God led them back to Kodiak after 2 years in the better part of California, NorCal. And, oh, we have lots of Northern Californians here. And after a few months of doing missions work in India, to volunteer for a year at the Baptist Mission. So, like many of us, a year turned into 3 years, and now she has a job that she loves as an outdoor preschool teacher, a dog she adores, and a daughter on the way with her husband, Caleb, who she just celebrated 5 years of marriage with. She has no plans of leaving anytime soon, well, at least until God calls her and her growing family somewhere else. So welcome Alicia to the team.
So my friends signed up for Let's Cook and they're like, oh, you're gonna talk about your baby, right? And now that was big. Straightforward story, you know, textbooks, so not going to talk about that. So my husband and I, we just celebrated 5 years, and... and...
7 is harder.
Okay, 1 year! And we have our first child on the way, which we're very excited about, and it, as we celebrated our anniversary, started thinking about our first year and how we were, I was just out of college, graduated, or a year after, and so I was young, and I had the, you know, the idea of what a wife should be. It's like, basically from like, I Love Lucy, you know, 1950s, like, you gotta have the house clean and fresh, or a hot meal every single night, and just pamper my husband and just love him, and you know, you're newlyweds, so you want to do that. And so we get married, but this is, you know, I'm 23 years old, like, I only knew how to cook top ramen, and cup of noodles, and mac and cheese, and Doritos. So I didn't know how I was gonna feed my 6'2" husband who just had a bottomless stomach. And so, but I had this goal, and I said, you know what? I have my resources, I have Pinterest, and my mom on speed dial, and my mother-in-law who lives 10 minutes away, and one of my very good friends gifted me a book, Anybody Can Cook. We're talking how to boil an egg, and how to cut an onion. So, I got this. So I
to like slave in the kitchen, like, because I knew nothing. And it would take me like 2-3 hours to cook a meal. I had no idea what I was doing. And so I'm telling my mother-in-law this, I'm like, oh, I just spent so much time cooking, and I have to go to work, and I just want to eat out, but we can't afford it. And so she tells me about this wonderful invention, the crock pot. I had seen it, I had heard of it, you know, the myth, the legend, and I'd seen it at many a church potluck, but didn't know what it was or what it did. And she told me, you throw all the food in, you turn it on, and then when you come home, you have a warm cooked meal waiting, ready for you to eat. And I'm like, that's awesome! I need this. So I run to Walmart, I get $30 crock pot, and I think, all the possibilities for this year. My husband's going to be well fed. And so I think, okay, what am I gonna make him? I have my cookbook, anybody can cook, that had the most wonderful chicken noodle soup recipe. Really like that. And it took, you know, it takes a couple hours for soup to simmer and get all the flavors, and I didn't like waiting, so I was like, okay, I'm gonna just throw the chicken noodle soup into the crock pot, gonna go to work, and then we're gonna come home and have warm soup for in the fall. It's gonna be great. And so I do this. I throw in the onions and the broth and the celery, carrots, you know, all that that goes into chicken noodle soup. Leave for like 10 hours. And then I come home and it smells wonderful. And I'm like, man, this is gonna be great, and I didn't have to do anything. And so I sit my husband down and I serve him. But I look at the bowl and I'm like, looks a little funny. But you know what? It smells awesome. It's gonna be great. So we sit down, we start eating, and it's just mush. Just complete mush. And I'm like, what happened? And this was the only meal we had, and it was like the middle of the week, or not even the beginning of the week, so we didn't have any leftovers. And I just broke down because I was like, I didn't feed my husband and he's starving. What am I going to do? And my husband, he's so sweet. He just keeps eating. He's like, no, no, honey, it's great. It tastes great. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. I'm a horrible wife. I don't know what I'm doing. And so he saved the day by, well, suggesting, let's just go to Taco Bell. And so we go to Taco Bell, and I have food in my stomach. It's not that big a deal. And I just think, man, I fed you baby food. That is what I gave you. And he's like, but it wasn't that bad. And I'm like, okay, okay. So I talk to my mother-in-law, and I tell her this story. And she goes, oh, you're not supposed to put pasta in for the entire time. And I go, well, that's great to know now. And so she's, you throw in an hour before. And I'm like, well, I wasn't home an hour before we ate. So I knew, okay, never going to do that again. I'm just going to make it from scratch on the weekends. Like, I'll have more time to wait and be patient. But now we're in our next stage of life, the child. And, I mean, the first year or so, it's pretty easy feeding that child. At least that's what I hear. And and I know now that I can make baby food in the crock pot. And she will love it. And it's going, and you know what? And she, even if she doesn't, she can't complain about it. I think I got this cooking thing down.
Our last storyteller tonight is Marion Owen. Marion was born in Tacoma, Washington. She spent many a summer swimming, playing tennis, and turning over rocks on the beach at Puget Sound in search of hidden treasures. She got her first Brownie camera at age 10. She moved to Kodiak in 1984 while working on tugboats. One time, while the tug was tied up at the dock, she decided she was done with going to sea and asked herself, what do I want to do with my life? Immediately, the following words popped into her head: photography and gardening. Never mind she didn't know a pinto bean seed from a human bean. In 1999, she married Marty Owen, the compost king, and together they run a B&B and galley gourmet dinner cruises. Marion's photography has been showcased in many venues, from French clothing to the Smithsonian. Please welcome Marion.
This is my summer outfit, by the way. Does it look alright? From 1978 to about 1988, I went to sea as a merchant marine officer and as an able-bodied seaman and a marine science technician. And it's during those 10 years that I really began to appreciate food. My first big job on a ship was on the NOAA ship Oceanographer, a 303-foot, very large vessel with 100 people on board, three of which were women. And I learned that Filipino cooks in the galley were miracle workers. They had their schedule. Now, the captain thought he was in charge, but it's really the people in the galley that are in charge. And they had their schedule. So Monday was chicken, and say Wednesday, that was stuffed green peppers with this tomato sauce on top. And then Friday was steak, and then Sunday. Now, Sunday, when we are working in the tropics, you know, we'd be gone 3 or 4 weeks at a time out of sight of land. And so we'd be in the tropics, and on Sundays, these cooks would produce a full roast pig with the apple in the mouth and the grapes in the eyes and all the fixings. But as a 20-something, you were more interested in the fact that everybody got one beer. So this is your tax dollars at work. And so, as a 20-something, you ran around to find out who didn't drink beer. Yeah. So my next gig was on the NOAA ship Miller Freeman. Now, the Miller Freeman also toured quite a bit in South Pacific and then a lot of time in Alaska. Now, on the Miller Freeman, I sailed with a very special cook, a baker, by the name of Ralph Naughton. Now, Ralph Naughton was part of the family that had a bakery here in Kodiak. And Ralph, he was kind of a skinny fellow, and he had a sealed over eye from a bar fight. And he said that the tidal wave went in one end of the bakery and out the other, and they never got refunded. But I would go up on watch a little early. I'd go into the galley and I'd say, "So Ralph, tell me some of your secrets." And I noticed one night he was kneading bread. And I said, "So how do you know how much flour to put in the dough?" And he said, "Marion, it's really easy. You pinch the dough like this, and then you pinch your earlobe, and they should feel the same." Everybody's pinching their earlobes. So after that, I went for work to work for Foss Tugs as an ABC-man and then as an officer on board. And there, I observed the cook coming up to the bridge one night to ask permission from the captain to cook split pea soup. Now, for boater types, split pea soup is storm soup. It's a no-no. You do not serve that on board ship unless you ask permission. And I also learned that when you're very seasick, Hershey bars help because it tastes better coming out. Now, one thing I learned also working on big ships was if you were out at sea for a while, you kept lettuce fresh by putting it first in a paper bag. I also learned that freezer compartments worked dual purpose because you put food in there and scientific samples because we're research ships, and if somebody died at sea, yeah, they go in the bag, like the lettuce, and they go in the freezer. So at one point, I stopped going to sea, and I met Marty, and then 9/11 happened. And Joelle Chenet, our French chef here in town, approached Marty and said, I'm putting on a fundraiser to help raise money for the surviving families of the people who died when the towers fell and the restaurants and so on. And he approached Marty and said, if I cook, can we use your boat to have a fundraiser dinner? The next spring, we had a dinner cruise, and Marty comes home really excited and says, what do you think, Marion? Joelle thinks it'd be great. We could help you with menus, and we could do dinner cruises. And I'm thinking, great, I'm going to spend my entire summer in Kodiak, Alaska, cooking. Well, that was 2003. We did our first dinner cruise. And my goal then was to create food that was local, as much as possible, healthy, looked good, simple ingredients. And we do about 100 of these every summer. And that's six people, 600 salads from the garden. And you know what I learned? Not just how to prepare meals and make people happy and show otters and wildlife and so on, was dinner cruises, preparing food for people was a simple way of saying, I love you. It's pretty intense doing dinner cruises, so Marty and I, we take breaks. And one time during the fall, we were camped out in southern Utah in a remote area. And Marty is sitting across from me, and he has a mini stroke. We come home, and we do research, talk with the doctor, and if you look around, everybody in the audience here, the CDC, Center for Disease Control, says 1 out of 4 people will die from heart disease. We also learned that populations that do not eat meat, dairy, and so on have no heart disease and strokes and diabetes. So we changed our diet. I had to learn how to cook all over again. No olive oil, no meat, no eggs, no cheese, no milk, no nothing. But it was worth it. And you know what? I've done 15 years of dinner cruises and serving people. And the most important thing I learned, and I still learn, is that in the end, it's all about how much you've loved. It's all about how much you've loved. So I want you to think about that as we go into the Thanksgiving season. It's all about how much you've loved. Thank you very much.
Galley Table Storytelling is made possible through a partnership with the Kodiak Arts Council and Kodiak Public Broadcasting Corporation. Visit us online at galleytables.com to find the date and location of the next live storytelling event. You can also browse our archives and listen to past stories or sign up to be a storyteller.